Sylvia's Synergy Effect, brought to you by Synergy Home Care.
Getting back in the kitchen got mom back into life. After her stroke, she felt uncomfortable doing what she used to do. But with her Synergy caregiver, Emma, things changed. She got help at home and regained the confidence to get back to her old recipes. Now the hardest thing is getting mom to stop making her biscuits. So good.
We believe getting back to what you love can keep you moving forward. Find your Synergy Effect with Synergy Home Care.
What's your name?
ESPN 97.5, KFNC 97.9, HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston.
Presented by Zadok Jewelers.
The Killer Bees!
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing? It's the Thursday edition of the Killer Bees. Jeremy on vacation all week, which means my man B-Mac, Brian McDonald, sitting to my right, and with him sliding out from behind the glass, that means B-Rod. Boston Rodriguez is behind the glasses. We'll take you for the next 3 hours from 3 to 6 p.m. Fellas, how we doing?
Doing great. I wish the weather wasn't as consistently rainy. Feels like I'm living in Seattle this last couple weeks. We get the hurricane gone, and now it's been raining a monsoon basically every single day.
Other than that,
it's been great.
I woke up this morning at like 6 to walk the dogs, and I'm like, nope, not even going outside.
That's when you get the treadmill and have them walk inside.
You make fun of that. There's a buddy of mine at the gym whose wife has a, kind of like a bum hip.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, hey, what do you know about treadmills? I go, well, we got one. We got like a Nordic Track. He's like, no, for dogs. I'm like, what?
Oh, yeah.
He's like, my wife wants one for both of our dogs. They're $600. I'm like, how?
Is this one of the really fancy ones? It's also like
Well,
there's those, but there's also ones you see for dogs that are rehabilitating, I guess, after a surgery or something. But they it's a treadmill that's like I guess they call it a water treadmill. I don't know if it has a more technical name than that. But I guess it helps because, obviously, in water, you're not...
Takes the weight off,
right. So I didn't know if you're talking about that.
No.
That would get really pricey, I assume. But
well, he said she went to the GRB for the dog show. They had, like, a dog show slash, like, expose thing. And she saw this thing, and she got roped in by the people with the business cards. And the next thing you know, she's coming home trying to talk him
treadmill?
Into a $600 dog treadmill. And he's like, yeah, no, I'm not endorsing that.
First world issues.
Yeah, how are you going to try and sell that thing? You're not. No one's buying that thing from you.
Back in the days when salesmen used to have to go door-to-door to sell their goods before the internet, I think that would have been a hard sell when you're knocking on someone's door trying to sell them the dog treadmill.
Yeah, one, the concept alone is going to be challenging, but at the $600 price tag, I'm like, yeah, no, that's not happening.
No.
All right, well, we transition from weather and the sleepless in Seattle Mariners who continue to do you a favor as of yesterday as we got off the air after the Astros win and then the Mariners lost. The Astros are legitimately one full game plus in first place, but they still have things to talk about. But the good thing coming off of yesterday's game was Hunter Brown was good yet again. Another 6 full innings of one-run baseball. He was fantastic, and Joe Espada had plenty of good things to say about Hunter Brown and what he looks like to him.
He's kind of have that ace feeling to him. You know, we are expecting him to go out there and deliver what he just did. We knew all along that is in him, and now he's starting to turn the corner, and he's starting to have that swag where he knows, hey, my team needs to win, and he did that. He delivered.
And it's interesting, B-Mac, because of the fact that we've had the discussion before, like if you had a must-win playoff game or a must-win game tomorrow and you could pick from any of your starters, who would you pick?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that for me, I still, if all things are even and everybody's healthy in the Astros rotation, Hunter Brown's not the guy I don't think I'm giving the baseball to. You may differ from that.
Yeah, I guess it depends on, like you said, when you set it up, like who's available, who's healthy. Because, see, I'm not feeling optimistic on Justin Verlander right now. It seems like he's still at least a month away, as like the conversation you and I and Barry were having yesterday. So if I were going with who's actually on the roster right now, it actually would be Hunter Brown. I do trust him more based upon this sample size going back to May 5th, more than Framber Valdez. Look, I know Framber Valdez, you know, he had his ups and downs in the first half, but the overall numbers got there by the time they got to the quote-unquote midway point at the All-Star game. But look, it's still in the back of my head with Frommer. You know, he's going to have the seven innings, one run, and then he's going to turn around the next day and go five and give up four because he's walking everybody. He loses composure. If he's playing the Rangers, maybe he even starts hitting batters at some point like we saw last year. I just don't trust his composure. I know people will point to 2021 against the Red Sox and the ALCS and the Game 6 of the World Series in 2022 and completely agree that Fromber was nails in those scenarios. But that's 2 and 3 years ago at this point. A lot has changed since then, and I right now, in this moment, I trust Hunter Brown more than Fromber Valdez.
See, it's a legit question. If you guys want to chime in, 713-780-3776, call, text, hit us up on social media. The big thing to me is I'm going to go with the guy that I know has been there, done that, to some of the points you were mentioning, and I'm going to lean Fromber simply because I know his stuff, when it's right, is as good as anybody in baseball, in my opinion. And his fastball's actually been kind of gaining a mile per hour or two this year. He's been up in the upper 90s from some certain times, where I believe that he has the stuff and the experience that I would lean his way, as opposed to guys that really haven't been there in that kind of a high leverage like the other two guys, in this case Blanco and Brown. But I have my reservations too, because driving in thinking about it, I'm thinking, okay, but what if you play a veteran manager in a team that goes, hey, all we got to do, regardless of how good this guy's stuff is make him field his position, and we could probably squeak out a run or two that might be the difference in the ballgame. Because we know that the meltdowns are one thing, but the other thing is it seems like he very much fears having to make plays on the mound, and when he's forced to do it, we've seen it too much. He melts down and throws balls away and gives teams easy runs.
Yeah, and it's not – I mean, it's definitely, you know, we've seen teams bunt at him. So there's definitely that aspect of where you can rattle them by making him field his position. We've seen how wild he can be trying to throw over at first, you know, what should be a very simple play, and he turns it into a dramatic, theatrical event trying to throw over to first. But even beyond that, I mean, I've mentioned it before on this show and on the bullpen. Saturday's noon to two with Sean Mapes tonight.
Get that in there.
We'll be on tomorrow, not tomorrow. Gosh, today's Thursday. This week is dragged. Yeah, maybe it's the rain. But we've seen even beyond just the people bunting at him and forcing him to fill his position. I can't forget last year's game two against the Minnesota Twins, the ALDS, the only game of that series in which the Astros lost. When it was to the point where even the broadcast was picking up how much the Twins bench, led by Carlos Correa from the dugout, was able to rattle Fromber Valdez by just yelling at him and jeering him and just getting into his head. Teams are going to see that. I mean, it's not like Fromber hasn't been out there. That's going to ramp up. I know Hunter Brown hasn't had those big game moments. He's participated in the past postseasons, but not to the level that he would be asked to do so this year. But he's just been so damn good. Like, I'm looking at his game log. He hasn't had a game under six innings since May 17th against the Brewers. I mean, going back further than that, when he first added that sinker, which was a May 5th game against Seattle, so we're talking about almost 3 months at this point. Since that time, 2.47 ERA, 94 strikeouts in 87 innings. That's an ace.
Yeah, it's
that's an ace.
It's hard to argue with his performance, but again, you look at it and you say, Blanco's pitched way above what we've ever seen from him before. Brown has pitched way above what we've seen from him before. That's all fine and dandy, but then the playoffs become a separate, different animal all in itself. And because of the fact that everything's ramped up, that one bad play or one bad pitch can have so much more of a bigger impact, that's where I'm at in the fact that I need to see these guys on that stage be able to do what they're executing, you know, in the regular season. Because I heard Paul talking about this on the way in, going, well, you know what? He hasn't really pitched against the best of competition to get the numbers that he's gotten with Hunter Brown. Well, he doesn't make the schedule. But the thing is that when you look at, he has one of the top three ERAs since early May, once he had the couple blow-ups early and he started throwing the two-seamer, that you can say it doesn't matter who he's facing. As long as he owns the inside part of the plate on hitters and he establishes that, he can throw whatever he wants, and he's going to have success. It's just, how do you handle the nerves? How do you come out when you get handed the ball for a do-or-die playoff game as opposed to a game in mid-July?
Yeah, and looking at the game log, there is definitely some credence to what Paul said about the quality of competition. I mean, there's games, obviously multiple games against Seattle. There's the Angels, Detroit, the White Sox, Colorado. There's a lot of bad offenses in this stretch for Hunter Brown. But I guess I would reply to that thought, and I understand it, but I would reply to it like, what would you expect a good pitcher to do against bad offenses? What Hunter Brown's done. So, I mean, I get that he's done it against, you know, bottom half of the league offenses for the most part, although there are games against, one of the Minnesota games he was terrible, and that was his one bad start. But he had a good game against Minnesota on June 2nd. There was a game right before the All-Star break against Texas, which I know their offense has taken a step back, but still an overall pretty good offense that he pitched well in those two games. So it's not only been bad offenses. And again, I mean, if you're looking or saying what you would expect from an ace level pitcher, or at least a good, very good pitcher, top half of the rotation pitcher, to do against bad teams, it's exactly what Hunter Brown's done. So I'm not going to knock him for that.
Oh, and that's the thing too. Like, to your point, you just have to throw your pitches no matter who's trying to hit them. And as long as you command your pitches and you dominate the zone, you're going to be effective. And the big thing to me is it's not the swing and miss rate matters to me, but the other thing is are you throwing competitive pitches that are in counts that you're up in the count.
Sure.
So 0-2-1-2, I really want to throw something that for the first three quarters up from the release point looks like it's going to be a strike, but I don't want it anywhere near the zone by the time it gets to the plate. And he had trouble with that early in the season. That's something he's gotten better on. Some of the younger arms that we see, I think that's something that they struggle with, because too many times, even in this last, you know, stretch of games where the Astros have been successful, 0-2-1-2 pitches are getting hit and barreled up way too easy because pitchers are just getting careless or they can't control that pitch. He has gotten a lot better, but that's something, again, come playoff time, you can't afford to miss and facing a playoff team miss middle with anything that you throw, no matter what the count is, and that's dangerous.
Yeah, and I would contribute some of what you said there to him adding the sinker. I mean, that's a pitch, in my opinion at least, that when it's thrown properly is usually bottom half of the zone to a little bit out of the zone. So that's not a pitch you want to leave high. I can attest from my experience playing MLB The Show, where it absolutely gets rocked if I leave it a little too high. High-level stuff there. But, yeah, I think that's, you know, and that's a pitch, like you said, that starts – He can start lower half of the zone, that can dart, you know, just below the zone and get the sort of either weak contact or swing and miss that you're looking for when you're up in the count. So I think that could be, those two things could go hand in hand with what you're talking about, plus him adding the sinker. And to the playoff experience, I would say, like, especially if we're comparing him and Blanco, I mean, Hunter Brown, at least compared to Blanco, not only has been in some of these moments, now he hasn't been on it on the biggest stage, because 2022, he was a reliever, and last year, obviously, they didn't get to the World Series, and I don't remember all of his outings and the exact stats on them, but they weren't exactly dominant. But at least compared to Blanco, he's been in those moments. Not only has he been in those moments, but he's also somebody that you've seen this level of performance coming from him from a long time. Like, this has been who he's supposed to be. He's been a top 100 prospect. He's been a guy that got the Justin Verlander comparisons, compared to a Blanco who is 30, just now getting a regular spot, and who didn't even find out he was going to make the team until the last spring training game at Minute Maid Park. So not to take anything away from Renel Blanco, but if you're talking about, like, can these guys handle the moment, I think Hunter Brown has been more prepared for handling this moment than maybe a Renel Blanco.
Look, I think to your point too on, like, he's doing the things that you expected him to do. We've discussed this in the past week or so, where my big hot button has always been, if you're the number one pitching prospect in the Astros farm system, look the hell out, because within 6 months to a year, you're probably going to have something happen, or something's going to derail you, or you're never going to be who you were expected to be. And Forrest Whitley is the latest and greatest of all those examples. Thankfully, with Hunter Brown, with as bad as he started the season, he has done the work and, you know, had some help. And even Verlander, they said, was involved in the process of him finding himself. Bregman as well helped him to where he's gotten to where you expected him to be. Because we all expected him. Jeremy and I were talking at the start of the season, this is a guy that could compete for a Cy Young someday because he's got top of the rotation stuff. Then with the Kansas City game and all the other games where the massive blowups happened, you're like, will he ever fully maximize the potential that we see with the way his pitches are, as opposed to how he pitches them? And now we're seeing that. So it's a good conversation to have, because I think Joe Espada would love to be able to pick from all the guys being healthy. But you do have your pitfalls and your pros and cons for each of the three guys.
I would say to Hunter Brown, and kind of like because I think a lot of people were frustrated, especially coming after off of 2022, where he was so dominant at AAA. Like, he was the ERA leader in AAA, but like a full run. And he did that in a league like the Pacific Coast League, which were, you know, they're playing games in Reno and Vegas and Salt Lake City, places where the ballpark absolutely flies out of the ballpark. So I think people saw the side-by-side videos people put out with Verlander, when he came up in 2022, he had two starts before they hit the playoffs. Both starts were very good. I believe they were both six innings, two earned runs. And the expectations were sky high. But I think what they have to realize, when you look at Hunter Brown's like track record, he didn't like come out as this number one prospect from day one, and this has been his track the whole time. He was a guy that developed a little more slowly and kind of had to work into it. So I think when you're looking at expectation, it should have been reasonable as for to expect and think he's not going to, just propel up the prospect standings and get here as quickly as a Verlander did. That's not his path. So, and thankfully, thanks to Bregman and Verlander helping him out, maybe his own maturation and figure things out, looking at the film and adding the new pitch, he's figured that out. But not every great pitcher's path to get to where they want to be is at the same length and the same pace.
No, you're right. All right, let's continue this conversation. But I want to know and hear from you. We both do. Who would you pick if you had a game to win in a playoff series starting tomorrow if all pitchers are healthy for the rotation that the Astros currently have? That includes Verlander. That includes Fromber. That includes Blanco and Brown. Who are you going with and why? 713-780-3776. Hit us up on text. Hit us up on Twitch. Hit us up on all the social media. And he's at Sacked by BMAC. And I'm at Pac-Man Joel with a K. Up next, besides that, who do you want at the deadline? We've been talking about this. We've been kind of prioritizing. But now it's getting down to the nitty-gritty time, as everything's going to be decided by Monday in the early evening. Who do you want, and what are you willing to give up? That's coming up next. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Segment as we continue to kick it off and keep it going until 6 p.m. BMAC, myself, and B-Rod as we continue the conversation on the Astros. It started with, if you had a game to win in a playoff situation tomorrow and all things were even in terms of the health and availability of the starting pitchers on this Astros roster, who you taking? BMAC was leaning towards Brown. I'm leaning towards Fromber. I'm interested what you guys have to think, and some of you guys already were pretty quick to respond. 8341 says, you got to lean Hunter Brown a little bit more than Blanco because Hunter did have all the innings last year. This is going to be a long year, long season for Blanco that he has not experienced anything like before, which is fair.
I think that is another aspect of it, the career innings pitch. I believe he's like 15 or so innings behind like his career high.
He's going to blow it out.
He's going to blow, I mean, by like his first start in August, he's going to blow by it. So, and I mean, you're going to get, hopefully, if things go the way the Astros would like them to go, he could be pitching obviously into mid to late October. I mean, he could be like 50 innings beyond that, which is, I mean, when you look at kind of the danger zone for, and again, he's 30, so maybe it doesn't apply it as much as it would for younger arms. He's not, a Mark Pryor, Kerry Wood age, but I mean, 50 innings pitched beyond your previous career high is a dangerous area to be in.
You know what the feelings I have? I have the vibes of Garcia, because when Luis Garcia was kind of speed dated through the process to get all the way to the big leagues, going from Double A right to the Astros.
Right.
Every single time he got the ball, it was like, well, this is the most he's ever thrown in a year. Well, this is the most he's ever thrown now by, this many more pitches. And it just kept growing and growing. And then the WBC, and it was like, whether he was going to pitch or not, he was prepping like he was going to pitch. So his offseason was cut a little shorter. And you're like, at a certain point, that's got to catch up with him. Granted, they didn't take the approach that teams like the Nats did with Strasburg or the Yankees did with Jabba Chamberlain, thinking, oh, we've got to baby this kid because this arm is an arm that's going to be our franchise. They didn't, they babied those two guys, and they still blew out their arms. So you never know what, and you don't know until, the whole genetics and everything that you look at from each individual pitcher. But because he's a little older, too, and you don't know how many more years he's going to give you like this, I don't know what the ramifications are going to be, because you really don't have any option but to just keep airing it out with him.
Yeah, and I wonder if this almost runs or how they might treat Blanco. And they're like, this wouldn't be fair to the player, but I think, you know, obviously sports and business isn't fair either. That because he's 30, because maybe even as good as he's been, he's not really planning into their long-term plans. Like, I mean, I would assume they would view him as being part of the team, maybe being like the fifth star in this team. But especially if Justin Verlander comes back, you know, you get Luis Garcia back, you get all these guys back. I don't think they really look at him as like the long-term foundational piece of their rotation. They might just start to view him as like a like an older running back. Let's just run his legs off.
That
like
sucks,
you're on the last year of your contract running back. You're taking every single carry. We're running your legs off. They might just throw Ronel Blanco's arm off. I mean, that would suck for him. Obviously, he gets his first shot of the big leagues. He throws a no-hitter on his first night out. Well, first night of the season. He obviously pitched in the majors before. And had this fantastic season that should have resulted in an all-star appearance and didn't, unfortunately. But they may just view this as kind of a one-off and throw his arm until it falls off.
You would hope that that's not as...
I mean, we've already seen his velocity drop.
Cutthroat as they would be.
You're seeing the red flags already.
Right, but that's why I'm saying, even now, especially because you're probably going to lean on him for this season alone in the postseason, that's why when we start talking about who to trade for, how many pitchers you need, you know, kicking the tires on Paxton and starting pitchers that are available, it's all because... Right now, ideally, for more than one pitcher in your rotation currently, including a guy that's right now on the IL that should be back in Verlander, you probably need to make sure that they get that extra day of rest and make sure that you're doing some things now so that they're not completely gassed by the time you get to the playoffs, no matter what you see about their long-term future. And that's why when we start looking at like who's out there and what to do, you just feel like instead of things that they might consider, I think it's almost destined. Not that I want to say the term, but I think it's desperation time. That
no, it's desperation.
They got to make a move for at least one starting pitcher, and they got to do it rather quickly because not only is the competition getting better you face, but because of what we're talking about in terms of the health and the long-term, you know, health of your pitching staff.
Yeah, I mean, it's both for performance on the field when you talk about Jake Blossom's and Arrigetti, and with, you know, the concerns of pitch limits with Ronel Blanco. I mean, that's 3/5 of your rotation right now, where you feel like we got to get somebody else here because either we don't really want Blossom and Arrigetti throwing every fifth day because they haven't been performing up to the standards of what you would need for a guy from a guy in a playoff race, or you see Ronel Blanco already visibly dropping off with the velocity dropping as he nears his career best in innings pitched. So, yeah, I'm fine with using the word desperation because, I mean, right now when you look at that rotation, like I trust Fromber, I trust Hunter Brown, I think I trust Ronel Blanco, although he's starting to show, you know, some signs of wear and tear. And then I don't trust Blossom and Arrigetti at all now.
At all. I don't either.
Yeah, I think that as I'm describing that situation, that does warrant the use of the word desperation.
No doubt. And because you have a less than farm system, then you are having even more of a sense of urgency because you know you're not going to be in a competitive, you know, bidding war with multiple pitchers in this free agent cycle.
Maybe for one guy, but not
right,
for
most. Saying. So if you get one guy the traditional trade route before the deadline, you still probably need one more because as we started the week and I started preaching about the fact that, hey, between Arrigetti and Blas, this is a massive series against a less-than team. They have to show you that they are capable of doing what you need them to do, at least for the next couple months, or you have got to really put the pedal down to try and look for other options. Both those guys showed you less than to where this – increase the sense of urgency for me about what they need to do. That's why I was saying, look, even from the standpoint of just Paxton, he may be on the downside of his career, but I believe he's got, I trust him more than either one of those two guys if I give him the baseball and say, go give me 5-6 innings and eat up, you know, and keep it within, you know, 3 runs. I think I'd give him a better chance than either one of those two guys.
Yeah, and we could kick around some of the names that might be available to the Astros at the deadline. We have Cody Davis from Locked On Texans coming up next segment. But I what you said there about Blas and Arrigetti really kind of triggered back to, for me, the previous conversation on Hunter Brown, where, okay, we need to see something from Blas and Arrigetti against these lesser-than teams. They didn't deliver. So if we can't ding Hunter Brown's like, oh, well, he's only doing against bad teams, but we just saw two nights before other guys who are facing the same bad team, the same single-A Oakland A's, not do it. So, I mean, I think you have to give more credit to Hunter Brown when you saw two guys the day before not be able to get it done.
Wheatstraw says I'd go Brown, then blonde-haired Blanco, Fromber, and then purple-haired Blanco.
Oh, I don't remember the purple hair. Oh, yeah, he had the braid, right?
No. It was in the last week. It was in the last start or two. He had a mishap with the dye job.
Right. Yeah.
And it became purple, and they couldn't change it right away.
Short hair or long hair, Fromber?
I think short hair is better.
Yeah. I don't know. The long hair is kind of is cooler, but I mean.
I'm not even worried about it. I don't care how it looks. I'm just telling you from the fact that, first of all, that it's got to be heavy.
World Series win, he was short hair.
Short hair.
Yeah, so I guess I'll have to go short hair.
All right, and then 409 Josh says, Fromber 5-0 in his last five starts. I'd still trade him to get some combo of immediate impact and prospects and hope the pitchers getting healthy can replace his starts. I am completely against that.
That is, lucky for that texter, Bad Take Boulevard's already kind of full because we might have to put him on the list. And I was actually looking at, because I'd been a little bit down on Fromber, so I was looking up the game or his game log this year to see if I was crazy. And really, it's just the one month he was bad, which was May. You look at the other months, you know, in March, April, his ERA is 260, June, it's 311, July, 289. The only time that he was bad, the inconsistency, the bad Fromber that we've complained about in the past was May, and obviously he's had two good months since then. But I hate the idea of, well, let's trade Fromber, and then let's hope that his production can be replaced by guys coming back from the injured list. Like, you can't count on that. Like, we think and hope Verlander's coming back by September, but again, that's by September, and I don't think you could count on anything, obviously, from McCullers, but not even Luis Garcia at this point. He's throwing 15 pitches.
Yeah, I don't
know.
He's
not close.
To our conversation with Barry yesterday, I just don't think you can get him stretched out in time to where that's a guy that you can hang your hat out and go.
Not as a starter.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm going with. I mean, he might be able to contribute in some way to your pitching staff, but at this point, I think it's a pipe dream to think that there's any chance of him being a starter for this team this season, being a guy you lean on or count on for, you know, big-time games.
No, I agree with you there.
All right.
There's no way.
Well, we got to get to Cody Davis. That's going to be next. He's going to be talking all things Houston Texans as we're deep into training camp already. Had our first fight, which means it's officially on. We'll talk to him about that and a whole lot more. And then we'll get back to the Astros conversation at some point. So stick with us. Hang in there. Give us your thoughts and opinions. We'll get to them. We'll star them. We'll notate them. And we'll bring them back up as we continue to roll on. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
We're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Back on the Bees as we continue to bounce around covering all that is Houston sports. We've got the Astros, and we've already covered a little of that, but let's talk about the team that everybody is so excited about right now, and that's your Houston Texans. Knee-deep in the middle of the training camp, getting ready for the Hall of Fame game against the Bears. Nobody better to talk about things that are going on a daily basis than Cody Davis. Cody Davis, Texans beat reporter for Locked On Texans. You can follow him on Twitter at Cody, C-O-T-Y, Davis, _24. Cody, thanks again for spending some time with us, carving out a few moments. Interesting to hear your kind of thoughts on the early stages of camp. We've heard the defense has looked really good, even dominating the offense. Is that a big deal? Is that something that has struck you as something that you've noticed?
Yeah, that's definitely the biggest takeaway through these first 6 days of training camp. I mean, look, the Houston Texans defense took major step forward last season as part of the reason why they finished 10-7 and, you know, made it all the way to the divisional round. But I just go back and I take a look at how Coach DeMeco Ryans and general manager Nick Caserio, even though with the improvements that they went throughout this whole entire offseason and improved the offensive line, the defensive line, improved the linebacker unit, and even the secondary, because when you take a look at, you know, the addition of someone like Kamari Lassen and Caleb Bullock, they are established themselves in training camp. And through those first 6 days, 7-on-7, 11-on-11 play, this defense looks like it's definitely going to take another step forward. Now you're looking at a situation where the Houston Texans could possibly have, if not the league's best defense, it's definitely going to be top three, man. All three levels have looked good, and the best part about it, even though all three levels have looked good, they have looked good and dominated in terms of having other players who have yet to practice, i.e. the linebacker unit has looked pretty solid, and that's without Christian Harris, who is by far is not the best linebacker when you look at the addition of Aziz, the second best linebacker. This defense, man, is going to be extremely good in 2024.
All right, Cody, let's stick with the defense here for a second and talk about someone you mentioned with Kamari Lassiter, the second-round pick out of Georgia. I think there was – a few question marks coming into the league. Like, is he a slot corner? Is he on the outside? People question his long speed. But what everything we've heard from practice so far is that DeMeco absolutely loves him. I saw the video from the Houston Texans Twitter account earlier today where DeMeco was just raving about him, about finishing a play and the fight and the dog that he has in him. We've heard about the battles he's had with Stephon Diggs, you know, shoving him out of bounds and really competing and not backing away from a veteran that some rookies might be scared to go one-on-one with. I mean, just your overall impressions of Kamari Lassiter, and do you see this as Kamari Lassiter already having locked down the number two outside corner spot?
I believe so. He has been the second-best corner for the Houston Texans so far in training camp. And the one thing that I love about him is the fact that he's a rookie who does not back down from the challenge. I mean, look, almost every single day at practice, he is going one-on-one, toe-to-toe with Stephon Diggs. And I don't know about you guys, but I've always had Stephon Diggs top 10 wide receiver, let's say over the past decade, you know, going back to his days in Minnesota. And this young man, a rookie who hasn't played a minute in the NFL, is stepping up to the challenge. And look, when you look at the offensive side of the ball, you can tell that the C.J. Stroud, Stephon Diggs connection is going to be something special. And the fact that he has interrupted that connection on several occasions, dating all the way back to mandatory minicamp, man, it says a lot about that young man. And another thing that I like about him is, even though he has had moments where you can tell he has made a quote-unquote rookie mistake, I mean, you guys saw it training camp yesterday, how Nico Collins put him in a blender. The one thing that I love about Kamari Lassiter is the fact that even in the situation where a wide receiver has gotten the best out of him, he's going to put that play behind him, and he's going to make sure he does whatever it takes to make a defensive stop on the next play. And that's exactly what he did, man. Kamari Lassiter, I really didn't know what to expect from him. I mean, going into the draft, I was hoping that the Texans came away with Kool-Aid because, in my opinion, he was one of, if not the best cornerback in the draft. And knowing that Kool-Aid went one or two spots ahead of the Texans, I was like, man, I really don't know if they came away with a good contingency plan with the addition of Kamari Lassiter, man. But 6 days in the training camp, going all the way back to OTAs and mandatory minicamp, Kamari Lassiter is really that guy. And I'm loving from what I'm seeing from him. And he definitely, I think, has already solidified that corner, that second starter that Nick Caserio and Coach DeMeco Ryan said that they wanted, dating all the way back to the NFL Combine.
Okay, Cody, and it's Cody Davis again, Texans beat reporter for Locked On Texans. That gets me spinning off into another thought process, which is we talked about who was going to play what positions in the secondary as we led into camp. If Lassiter is locking up the outside corner opposite of Stingley, then you're starting to look at your nickel corner. We've seen that Petrie has been moved from safety to play a little bit more a nickel, and you know, everybody's been talking about, and DeMeco's been talking about the fact that he just likes the fact that he has the ability to do that. What does that say about how the secondary shakes out? We don't know if King's going to have a spot on the roster. If he does, we thought he was a nickel. How does that kind of shift everything else that's open in the secondary?
To me, it kind of goes back to what Nick Caserio talked about during the first day of training camp. Look, even though this roster looks really good on paper as of right now, Nick Caserio basically told us that they're going to use training camp to continue their evaluation and to see what areas still needs improvement before the 2024 season. And I say the reason why I went back to, you know, what Nick Caserio talked about, I remember the last time I was on you guys' show and I was like, well, I really don't know if they're going to put too much money into the safety unit because at the time it looked like Jalen Petrie and Jimmy Ward was going to be your two primary safeties. However, 6 days in, as you guys just alluded to, Jalen Petrie seemed like his primary position has been that nickel position. So now the question is, what is going to shake? How is the safety unit is going to shake up? You already know if healthy, Jimmy Ward is going to be out there. Look, Kalen Bullock, he has made plays. I think he has done really good through the first 6 days. However, I wouldn't say that he locked down, you know, the second starting safety. I wouldn't necessarily go that far, which means I would not be surprised if we, after, you know, let's say one or two preseason games, you see the Houston Texans starting to make moves and bringing in more veteran safeties. Like that defensive backfield is definitely something that everyone needs to make sure that they keep their eyes on, because this shift that no one saw coming, including myself, having Jalen Petrie play more in that nickel position changed a lot of that safety unit.
Cody Davis. You can find him on Twitter at Cody or at Cody Davis underscore 24. Cody, one place where the Texans did make a move was adding to the running back room, signing Cam Akers, who coming off a second Achilles injury, which is just unheard of for, I mean, one Achilles injury for a running back to come back from until recently was unheard of, and he's coming off of two. What do you make of this signing overall? I mean, if he's out there practicing, I mean, how does he look? Do you see him as someone who's going to challenge Damian Pierce, having had, you know, a previous experience in a similar offense under Sean McVay with the Rams? Or is he more kind of just a depth piece that's going to fill some time until Joe Mixon gets back?
I think he's just a depth piece to fill some time until Joe Mixon come back. To answer your first question, you know, Damian Pierce has looked really good through these first 6 days of training camp. So much so, there's been times I say that's the Damian Pierce that everyone loved during the 2022 season. Now, everyone knows, you know, 2023 was a down year, both on and off the field for him, and it affected his game. However, it seemed like he's slowly but surely getting back to that player. And then, you know, when you take a look at the rest of that running back room, look, the running back group is one of those training camp battles that is not going to be at the top of the list, but it's definitely something that everybody should keep their eyes on, because once you get past Damian Pierce, you have Darrell Gumbawale, who has gone out there in training camp and made plays. Plus, like I always say, it's always good to keep him on for special team purposes after that field goal he made. But in addition to Darrell Gumbawale, you got British Brooks, you got Gerard Jordan. Both of those running backs have definitely they are making a name for themselves, you know, rather in the passing game, rather in the rushing attack, or rather just utilizing their skills as a blocker. Like, this running back room is going to be very competitive, you know, especially once preseason starts. And the addition of Cam Akers, look, I believe it was on Monday, Coach D'Amico Ryans just put it plain and simple. The only reason why they signed him was to see if he could come in and compete. And through these first couple of days of training camp, I haven't seen Cam Akers get too many snaps going 7-on-7 and 11-on-11. And I'm pretty sure, you know, his signing has a lot to do with the fact that Joe Mixon has been out through these last couple of days of practice. But that running back unit, if something happened and Cam Akers can make things interesting, that running back unit is definitely one of the most interesting positions so far.
All right, I'm going to throw it back on you, Cody. I'll put a little pressure on you on this one, because you mentioned, which is music to my ears, if they are adjusting things in the secondary, I would love to see a veteran, and there's some good names, veterans out there that I would love to see a part of this team, namely Mr. Simmons that comes out of Denver is a guy that I've had my eye on for a long time. But we know that Nick has said he's watching the veterans every day. He knows who's out there. He also looks to see. I didn't think that the running back number two was on the Texans roster currently when camp opened. And Brian and I had discussed whether Cam Akers was capable of that or not. But if you had the money to spend, if there's one other position that you can go out that with guys that are still out there and you can upgrade, is it safety? Is it running back? Is it linebacker? Is it somewhere else? Where would you go if you had the opportunity?
I got to go with safety now. I have to go with safety. You know, and as you mentioned, I think Justin Simmons, he's not only the best safety on the market, I think he might be the best player still available. And the Houston Texans, if I'm not mistaken, they still have someone in the ballpark of $17 to $18 million. Not saying that someone like Justin Simmons is going to eat all of that, but like I mentioned, in terms of looking how they're utilizing Jalen Petrie, and it seems like every single day at training camp, he's spending less and less time with the safety unit and more time with the cornerbacks, more time with the guys that's competing for that nickel spot. It does leave a vacancy at safety, which means that, look, once again, Kalen Bullock, he has had some bright spots so far in practice. However, if the Texans were to open against the Indianapolis Colts on Sunday, I would not be comfortable watching Caleb Bullock, you know, start alongside Jimmy Ward, which means you're going to have to go out there and spend some money and address that vacancy. And like you mentioned, and like a lot of people are mentioning, you have to take a look at, like, a veteran, Justin Simmons. I definitely think he will be a huge upgrade to a defense that has already looked dominant so far.
Texans beat reporter Cody Davis for Locked On Texas joining us here on the Killer Bees. Cody, one more for you. Going back over to the offensive side, I think probably at least the biggest splashy move of the offseason was the trade that brought Stephon Diggs here. And we've obviously spent a lot of time leading up to training camp about, you know, rehashing and retelling all the stories about, you know, is Diggs a good teammate? Is he not a good teammate? Is he talkative? Is he disruptive? And everything out of camp so far has been that Diggs is a great teammate. So just your overall impressions of how he's worked with his new teammates and also maybe what you would expect his role to be, because it seems like Nico, in my opinion, Nico is obviously locked up as your ex. I would say Tank is your number two on the outside, and I would expect Stephon Diggs to be in the slot. But what have you seen as far as their usage and how they're making those three guys fit on the field at the same time?
I think offensive coordinator Bobby Slowey said it best. Whoever's going to be open, that's the one that's going to get the ball, plain and simple. And as of right now, 6 days in the training camp, I don't think the Houston Texans have a quote-unquote number one wide receiver. Of course, when you take a look at a quarterback like C.J. Stroud, you know he's going to go through his reads and progression. And whichever one of those three wide receivers is going to be open, that's who's going to get the ball. But in terms of Stephon Diggs, man, the one thing that I love about Stephon is the fact that I think that he's definitely living up to everything that he said, dating all the way back to mandatory minicamp. When we first had an opportunity to talk to him, he talked about how he wanted to take on a leadership role, a veteran role, where he have an opportunity to help a lot of the young players on the roster. You know, whether it be someone in a wide receiver unit, whether it be some of the, you know, young DBs. And of course, that kind of talk, first time talking to your new media, new team and everything, you know, a lot of time that could just be talk. However, he is definitely living up to everything that he said when we first talked to him during mandatory minicamp. And one of my favorite things that I've loved from Stephon Diggs, outside the fact that he is still one of the top wide receivers in the game right now in terms of his ability with his route running, in terms of his ability to make plays, get open, and, of course, be a very useful and valuable target for C.J. Stroud, has been his ability to just step up and just be a leader and showcase his veteranship. Because if he's not out there on the field, he's always on the sideline talking to John Mechie, talking to Tank Dell, talking to Nico Collins. And, you know, even when he's even shown the ability to, you know, buy into and showcase his veteran leadership to the defensive backs, i.e. talking to a Kamari Lassen, talking to a Derrick Stingley Jr. He's always talking and always coaching up these young guys. And when you take a look at the Houston Texans, and knowing that this is still a young team, you definitely need somebody like Stephon Diggs in the locker room. Now, of course, hopefully everything stays like that. Nothing changes, you know, midway through the regular season. But Stephon Diggs, man, I think Titus Howard put it best. You know, all that Divas talk, you know, that was before he got to Houston. He is a great teammate, and from what we are seeing from the outside looking in, he's definitely living up to that.
That is the voice of Cody Davis. He is the beat reporter for your Houston Texans at Locked On Texans. Cody, we really appreciate your time. We'll check back with you, if you don't mind, throughout periodically the season, because the updates are very valuable and extremely interesting.
Thank you. Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
There you go, Cody Davis. All right, let's talk about something that we talked about, BMAC, with Cody, and that is the fact that the word out of camp for the early portions of camp is this defense is so dominant, it's dominating the Houston Texans offense. And is that something to be concerned with, or is that something to just kind of put a feather in your cap of the defense and say, good on you, D'Amico, way to go, and you on Nick Caserio for getting the pieces? We can talk about that. We can talk about a whole lot more. But if you guys want to get in on the conversation, 713-780-3776, call, text, hit us on all the social media aspects. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Jeremy's on vacation this week. Brian McDonald filling in with me today and tomorrow, and he also did Monday. Barry Laminack did Tuesday and Wednesday. Appreciate the Bees filling in for the B as we continue to get on with the B and the S and everything in between. I have from time to time, just maybe not like on the air, but...
Honestly, I can't get past the music that Austin rejoined with. We're playing Firestarter by Prodigy, and I did not expect to hear that today.
He's got a very wide variety of bump back music.
Yeah, I remember buying this album when it came out, and like there was this song and nothing else.
It was
definitely a one song album, and even this song I've grown tired of. But every once in a while, it hits you in the right spot.
But you could also charge it if you worked at certain places where we used music for bumps and videos.
Oh, you get music
like
for free?
Used to.
Okay. Kind of you could buy it on the company car because you could use it in arena.
That's right.
Man.
There you go.
That's the way to go.
Those were the days.
Yeah, those were the days.
No question about it. All right. So we just got done talking to Cody Davis, who's the beat writer for the Texans. And he was talking about the fact that, you know, through camp, what we've heard is exactly what he's seen, and that is that the defense has been dominant, so dominant that there's been times where they have dominated this offense, which we know is loaded, which we also discussed with him about the, you know, all the receivers and everything they've added with Mixon and bringing back Schultz. What are your thoughts on, is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? Is it bad that the offense hasn't been able to take to this defense? Is it good because the guys that they added with a lot of big free agent names on the defensive side of the ball are being effective already? How do you view that?
Look, I think the norm, at least that first week of camp, is pretty much always that the defense is going to be the head of the offense because just, I mean, offense has to build rhythm, has to build timing, has to, you know, build up their chemistry. Whereas, you know, on the defensive side, especially with the front and the edge rushers like Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter, they're just, you know, pinning their ears back and getting upfield. There's especially in this defense where Danielle Hunter's talked about, like, D'Amico tells him, like, don't think about anything else. Just go after the quarterback. Just get upfield. Don't worry about the run. Don't worry about anything else. Just get upfield. So I think it's natural for the defense to be ahead because they don't have to build up as much chemistry and rhythm. But yeah, I think it is noticeable to the degree because, I mean, you're seeing – I mean, take for a grain of salt, you know, like people reporting training camp stats. But I saw from DJ Bienemy, friend of the station, he'll be with us on Fridays here in the fall, that CJ Stroud in yesterday's practice went 4 of 12. Passing. I mean, this is not.
But he said four drops on catchable passes.
Sure. I'd have to see them with my own eyes because I don't. Maybe, you know, everyone's definition of catchable might be different. That's a subjective opinion. But still, this is not like it's not an average run of the mill offense that this defense is dominating, right? It's an offense with the offensive rookie of the year in CJ Stroud, with a multiple time Pro Bowler in Stephon Diggs, with Joe Mixon hasn't been available. But then obviously Tank Dell and Nico Collins, who we all think very highly of. Dalton Schultz is the top half of the league tight end. It's Laramie Tunsil, obviously, on the offensive line, and then Shaq Mason, some of the other pieces, you know, we'll see about how good they are. But it's a very good offense that finished 11th last year in points scored, and the Texas defense is dominating. So I do think it's notable. It's not concerning to me for the offense because – I mean, the Texans' offense isn't going to face a defense as good as the Texans every week. Now, there will be some weeks, like when they face the Ravens and the Jets, where that could be an issue. And it certainly was last year when they went up against those two teams. But I'm not really concerned yet for the offense because it's early and because this is kind of the natural process. But to me, it's very encouraging for the defense that what we have seen through the offseason, them put on paper – and even beyond that, because we weren't sure what they were getting with Kamari Lassiter, has really shown up so far in these early practices. And they look like, I mean, Cody Davis put number one defense in the league on them. At worst, top three. I wouldn't go that far as my voice cracks.
I wouldn't either.
But I do, like I said, on Cash or Trash, and I think they could be top five defense.
Well, here's where I'm at. I don't think that it's a negative for your offense. I think to the points that you brought up and the fact that, you know, everybody comes into camp at a different shape. You know, some guys use camp to get in shape. So to your points on timing and the fact that when you're putting new wrinkles into the playbook, and you know, we lose sight of the fact that this is Slowick's and CJ's second year with this playbook, but this is Diggs' first year with this playbook.
Right.
You know, Skronik, another guy that you're trying to work in to see what he can do for you. So there's a lot of different factors that go into. I'm not putting any of this on the offense. I'm not concerned at all about the offense. There's just too much talent on that offense from top to bottom for me to be worried about. But I am going to be excited about the fact that this defense, because you added Hunter, because you added Autry, because you're expecting even more out of Will Anderson. But the bigger thing to me than all that is, you know, when you add Elshayer to the middle linebacker position, when you know that he's played for D'Amico in the past and you know how he was still dominant with tackles and everything else for Tennessee, and the fact that you figure out that a draft pick could quite possibly be a plug-and-play starter from day one of this season, you can't help but get really pumped up and know you've got a defensive-minded head coach that now you're giving him weapons he's familiar with in the case of Elshayer, and even Jimmy Ward if he can stay healthy, but you're giving him a pass rush to your point of being able to pin your ears back from multiple positions and go get the quarterback. Makes it easier on your secondary, makes it the entire unit, give him the ability to be more dominant. That's what's exciting to me, that If you can do this against an offense that's going to be as highly touted as the Houston Texans offense is going to be, just wait till they get into how, no matter how hard you think the schedule is going to be and the quarterbacks you're going to face, which we've highlighted, the fact that this defense looks like it doesn't really matter who they're facing. They're going to be effective. They're going to be able to do what they need to do to keep you in the ballgame. That's exciting.
Yeah, no, it's very exciting because I think this defense on paper has the ability to I disagree with Cody about top defense in the league. I think three is maybe a stretch, although I think they'll be top five, so we're splitting hairs between three and five. But I do think they have a chance to be the best defense in team history. I mean, you could say that maybe belongs to 2011 or 2012. Some of the early teams before that had some pretty good defenses, but I think on paper, and some of those things on paper, like Kamari Lassiter, are already starting to prove to be maybe even better than you hope for. I think this team could be as disruptive and impactful to winning games, leading team. Not that the offense is going to need the defense to lead them to wins much when you have C.J. Stroud, but I think this could be one of the most impactful playmaking defenses the Texans have ever had.
I think that's the one thing you have to consider as a Texans fan. As excited as we were and we are about all the weapons CJ has, because we've been talking about year two, you don't want to see him have any regression. You want to make sure you surround him and take advantage of these years where he's not making the big money yet. And you want to make sure that this team has the best chance to win. They've done all those things. That's been a lot of the talk because of how explosive this offense can be. But almost, if it's possible, with the money that they spent, it's almost been a little bit more under the radar that, yeah, they added pass rush. But what are they going to do at the second corner position? What are they going to do at safety, especially because Jimmy Ward has never been able to stay healthy since he's been a Texan? What are they going to do to improve the depth at linebacker? Now all you're hearing is the fact that if you think that offense is going to be that good and this defense has kind of settled in to be already more advanced than you thought they were going to be, the sky's the limit for this team, and that's the biggest part of excitement for me. Is like, I had questions about certain spots on the defense.
Sure.
The fact that it looks like that they are already kind of gelling and doing things that you were hopeful that they could do by midseason, that's the biggest excitement to me.
I mean, I think there's still a couple spots that we'll have to get answers to. Like, I'm not hearing really any reports out of camp about how the run defense is looking, right? I think we have
a big thing from last year.
We have some questions about that, you know, changing out your defensive tackles to Mrs. Foley's baby boy and Tim Settle, maybe DeNico Autry mixing in at times on the interior, although I think he's more of a rotational edge rusher. So you have questions about that, and as you pointed out with Jimmy Ward, you have questions about safety, but I mean, despite all that, I still think this defense looks like it could be. I mean, I said it on Tuesday. I think they're going to be a top five defense, especially. I mean, they're dominating an offense right now with C.J. Stroud, all the wide receivers we talked about, and a part of the training camp process where you would expect. Like, there's no exotic looks they're throwing out there right now. There's no, right. Like, the full tool chest that DeMeco Ryans has that he would, you know, deploy during the regular season to confuse quarterbacks and cause chaos in their backfield, he's not doing that right now.
No,
the first week
right
of training.
Now, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And despite being vanilla, they're dominating.
Yeah.
That's a very encouraging sign.
Yeah, no question. I mean, and the fact that, you know, all offseason it was Okuda, Henderson, you know, who's going to be capable. Now it's more excitement in knowing, hey, look, if you've already got Lassiter at the other corner and they're working at Petrie going into the nickel, you basically seem like, aside from safety, most of the worries have been tied up with the exception of run defense. So it's something to keep an eye on. Something else to keep an eye on that we haven't talked about yet, but it needs to be addressed, is the fact that we talked to Cody Davis about the running back position and specifically who's going to fall into the number two spot. Is it a possibility that we need to worry about that number two spot being the number one spot because Joe Mixon has been absent, and now we're finding out why, and is it at a level of concern? We'll talk about that as we open up hour number two of the show, so don't go anywhere. 60 minutes in the books, still 2 hours to go of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM. Before we go to the break, I do want to tell you about the good people at Vanderford Air. Look, I've been telling you about them because of the fact that it is so important right now, before we start with this rain, it's cooled off a little bit. We're headed for triple-digit temperatures, and once we get into them, we're not going to get out of them till October, September or October. That means your AC units are going to have to be in tip-top shape, and if they aren't, you're going to have someone you can call and get service immediately to get them fixed, because we know how grueling the heat can be. That's why I speak for Vanderford Air. You can go to VanderfordAir.com right now and see all the services they offer. They do plumbing. They do water heaters. They do so many more things. But the main thing that I'm telling you about right now, because it's so important and apropos, is everything that they do for HVAC and AC units. They're great. And their guarantees are why I speak for them, because it's exactly what I want when I deal with a business that provides services. I need everything to be guaranteed or my money back. I need everything to give me guarantees that I'm going to get what I am signing up to call them for. And that's why Vanderford Air is on the top of my list. If I call them, I am assured that there's a 24-hour guarantee that from the time I call them, within 24 hours, they're going to be at my door to see me to figure out what's going on. Not days, not wait till our call log slows down. None of those delays that are going to absolutely kill you with more heat and humidity. Nope, it's 24 hours, and I love that. And then it gets into the actual services they provide. From the people that they're going to deploy to take care of your problem, the work that they're going to do, to the parts they're going to use if they're going to fix something, or the systems they're going to install, everything is 100% satisfaction guaranteed or your money back. The temperature is going to be exactly what they promise it's going to be. The installation is going to go smoothly and do it exactly the way they tell you they're going to do it. And they're not just going to tell you, they're going to put it in writing. Everything is lock, stock, and barrel for you to make sure that you are satisfied with what they do. That's why I speak for them. That's why I tell you to lock their number in your phone right now so you always have it when you need it, because you never know when you're going to need it. But as soon as you need it now. 281-557-COOL. 281-557-COOL. Put it in your phone, remember it, use it, and know that you're going to get guarantees from the best in the business. It's VanderfordAir.com.
ESPN 97.5.